Blog Talk Radio.
African Sustainability, Part 2. Brother Shabaka joins us in a few minutes. Please stay tuned. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be at the Blog Talk Radio site at that point. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of UBU. Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you?
Peace to you also, Sister Q. I am doing fine. I'd like to say hello to the listening audience, and I appreciate the pleasure and opportunity to have me back to talk about a very important subject.
We're glad to have you back. Brother Shabaka, during your last visit, you define sustainability for us. Please refresh our memory of the definition you used and how you see it being used in an African context.
Thank you very much for that question, Sister, and I really appreciate the opportunity to try to get back to the subject. I believe when I was there last, I tried to define sustainability as a practice of maintaining processes of production. I'll say that again, the practice of maintaining process of production, those things that are needed in order to produce our food, clothing, shelter, what have you, by periodically and systematically replacing resources used with resources of equal or greater value without degrading or endangering natural ecosystems until an internal and or external disruption occurs. Now let me define what I mean by that, because that might not be clear. What I'm trying to say is that there is always periods of sustainability, but nothing lasts forever. Civilizations, empires, kingdoms, nothing lasts forever. And usually there is the combination of internal disorder or problems accompanied by external forces. That external force could be other people, other regions, or activity in outside in the environment, which caused a disruption, and therefore what was sustained over a period of time in creating the process of productions has been disrupted and no longer can occur. So that means that nothing lasts forever. But more importantly is the fact that in any type of process involves people, and those people are engaged in what we call human activity. And those activity, be they a person, a group, or a society, are sustaining and sustaining themselves to the point that they are producing what is necessary for them to stay alive, whether as a person, whether as a group or family in the initial sense, a society, a nation, a kingdom, or what have you. Now, if we take this this generalized definition that I gave and put it in an African context, there are a number, and you usually hear these referred to as development projects. And there are projects, you know, that are pretty sophisticated. For an example, I believe I mentioned the last time about a project that was created in Senegal. I think probably the end of last year. Well, if it wasn't created, it was something that was building up. And what happened was a Lebanese who was living in Senegal at the time had developed or designed a process by which to build shelters which could be transformed into schools. But the original idea of the development of the shelters was to develop projects or material that could be used to build dwellings on the moon. That's originally what he had. But now he was in, and what gave him the idea, he looked at the environment in Senegal where he was, dry Arab Sahel type areas, all right, and see what he had was just the material that was there. And he knew that he could take that material, mix it with cement, and create blocks which then could be shaped or congregated together to produce buildings. And the materials were such as they were material right there from the environment, all right, to shelter and provided a very cool and relaxing and comfortable environment for which students could be there for, you know, a number of hours during the school day. All right, that was in Senegal. I think everybody, at least most of the people in the nationalist community, have heard of the Songhai Center, farming center in Benin. It's been there for years, and it's a self-sustaining, eco-friendly farming system. They produce everything, they make everything, and they reuse, recycle everything to be used over and over again. I mean, it's very dynamic. I don't want to get too much into the detail, but that's another example of a sustaining project that's been used and can be used successfully. Let me give you another one, and one of them is a project that's comes out of, well, these projects are really all over Africa. As you know, there's been a lot of talk about waste, particularly of plastic, and the difficulties in recycling plastic, because plastic is not very biodegradable. You have it, it degrades in about 1,000 years. Well, that doesn't help you. You need it to degrade a lot sooner than that. So it's not very biodegradable. All right, but people have, you know, what they do is because the industry, particularly the industry that uses those bottles, plastic bottles, make it easier. You know, you just throw them away. And then particularly, as you know, and particularly on the African soil, you know, people take liners in, they're tourists, they got bottles, they throw it off on the side. And the next thing you know, these bottles wind up on the beaches and the shores. All right, and so they just piled up there, and it's tons of them. All right, well, innovative people, particularly throughout the African continent, but this one group that I was looking at, well, one is in Ghana, another one is in Kenya, are able to take this, use materials from their environment, all right, and then, you know, with furnace and what have you activities, create blocks. So they can create blocks, and these blocks, when they are created, if you were to hold the block in your hand and drop it to the ground, it wouldn't break. Okay. All right, so so there was a certain degree of tensile strength associated with that block from the processing of mixing the ingredients, the plastic, melting the plastic, mixing it up with the clay and what have you, material there, and producing this block, which then could be used, I think what were used then, you know, to build nice patios on your homes, even to build walls. And some people have used this as also material for roads. So there's many applications that you can see as a consequence of just looking at your environment. Now, the important question is the sustainability. Now, what do we mean by the sustainability? Let's go back to Senegal. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, here you have a community which is rural. Okay. And sustainability means your ability to keep things going, as I apply to that definition. So if there is no disruption, then you can sustain that process. You know, you can continue to build that process, build extra buildings and what have you. Now, that's there could be a material shortage, which would be an internal process that would disrupt your ability to continue producing the necessary blocks needed to build new attachments to your school or to perform maintenance. All right, you get what I'm saying? So that would be, if the materials ran out, you couldn't do that. All right, so that's an internal. I wanted to show that as an internal disruption. Another disruption could be the local government wants to build a road. You got that? Okay, now that's external. All right. The local government wished to build a road. And, you know, as we have over here, eminent domain, obviously, if you have eminent domain, all right, then your little schoolhouse is going to go.
Exactly.
Regardless how much you protest. Now, let's examine this for a minute, though. All right. What could inhibit the eminent domain power or authority of the local or national government from disrupting this process that you have in place and has been sustained and successful in producing the kind of product that you want? An educated child, an educated farmer who could then use his or her skills to do other things for the community, for the village.
I can't
think of it, right? Well, I can think of it. We call it people power.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
The
so
people power.
The government.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Petition the government in sufficient numbers that the government have to see if there is a benefit for the government to pursue what it wants to do in terms of building that road, or if it was going to be more costly for the government to continue, based on the outpouring of people, you know, who were against that idea.
Right.
All right. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So that would be an impediment to the government efforts, all right, to disrupt, all right. But now if the government mm-hmm. says that the benefit is better to go ahead and disrupt, then the government will go and disrupt. And they more than likely, if they did that, they would have the power to be able to enforce it. So
exactly.
I wanted to use that as an example to show the, mm-hmm. you know, you have a sustainable project until at mm-hmm. such point either outside forces want to do something else or internally, mm-hmm. you know, you cannot get and replace the resources that is necessary in order to keep what you create going. So consequently, mm-hmm. It becomes mute in the terms
right.
of in terms of the in the process in, let's say, Benin. Now
mm-hmm.
the farming process is so advanced that the government has no interest in disrupting that because it needed, although
right.
it was not a project that it itself initiated. It's a
mm-hmm.
project that was initiated by people, and the government sees a need for that because they know they do not have the resources to either sustain it if they took it over.
Right.
And probably would not. Right. And down, it serves a purpose because it keeps the people employed. It keeps the people fed because,
mm-hmm.
like I said, it was self-sustaining. They take care of themselves. They can feed, clothes, eat themselves, eat. All right.
Uh-huh.
And so... And so, therefore, as a consequence, it can be sustained. So there is no
mm-hmm.
external interruption, all right, and there is no internal, all right, because everything is recycled.
Mm-hmm.
And they recycle and they use everything in this recycling so that they can put it right back into the environment, into the community, and sustain the constant production of food and animal and husbandry. And can keep the farming implement going. So let me just stop here a minute just to see if you might want to follow up with another question, or you have some members from the audience who might want to say a thing or two.
I don't see anybody with a hand raised for a question, but I'm thinking about this sustainability thing where you were mentioning the government. The one in Benin, where the government sees the benefit of leaving it alone. I think, do you have any idea how long it took to get to the point where it could do everything from, you know, from beginning to end and keep it just going? Do you
yeah,
have
well,
any
the project.
Idea how that
No, I don't, you know, the initial stages, I don't know, it's been around for a number of years. And so
mm-hmm.
It was an effort. All right, it was an effort. And brother came to mind. He got a good team of people. They thought it out.
Mm-hmm.
And see,
mm-hmm.
in order to sustain, in my opinion, what you have to have is that you have to look at the people power, and then you have to say, is this project that I wish to create? One,
right.
is
mm-hmm.
it a need? In other words, does the people need it? All right.
Right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Is it feasible to be able to create with the resources that are here, in other words, that are local? If not,
mm-hmm.
what kind of resources are needed from to be exported or imported into the region? What is the cost in order to get those? And so you
mm-hmm.
got a number of questions that you must ask yourself, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have to look at the people power, which brings your intellectual resources. And then you got to look
mm-hmm.
at the material power. What do you have in the environment? What do you have to borrow, beg, and pay for? And then,
mm-hmm.
then you have to lay out your plan. How long will it take, all right? And then, most importantly, since you said it was a need, once you are near completion, you know, how do you communicate to the community of folks of this utility and then get them involved? Because getting them involved and excited and participating, you know, is part of the process that is needed and sustained. I mean, if you got a farm and nobody buys your products, eats your food, that farm is
right.
not going to last long, you know.
Exactly.
And another thing that we particularly hear about, particularly in the Western context, is competition. We're always talking about competition. Who has the next farm? And what are they doing? Mm-hmm. Well, it so happens mm-hmm. that this particular farm, because of how it was created, all right, did not necessarily have its competitors. But then again, when you look at development on the African continent, you know, even additional farms coming up like this would not necessarily be competitive. You know, complementary right. maybe in some sense, you know, based on what mm-hmm. products they are producing, but not necessarily competition. You know, that, mm-hmm. the competition fire, you know, is definitely European, you know, in terms of being indoctrinated.
That sounds like a European concept in that we always look for complement, how we can complement each other, or I do the best I could do what I'm doing and you do the best that you could do what you're doing. We're not competing with each other. We are each doing the best we can do to serve the community. That seems like a better way to look at it, I think.
Yes, this is a good way to look at it. Yeah. In Kenya, very similar situation with the people who are converting the recycling that mm-hmm. I mentioned about. There is, because of construction, the cost of construction, because of repairs to the construction, you know, unfortunately what the colonial system has done or did do was create in the mindset of some Africans on the continent that they had to imitate what they saw in Europe or what they saw mm-hmm. Europe leave, all right, mm-hmm. the field that they had arrived or the field that they are no longer savages, you know, because mm-hmm. the European really plant that in your mind. You're either a savage or you're a slave.
Right.
And there was nothing good, even though they learned everything and stole everything from us. You know, we were either savages right. or slaves. All right. Yeah. All right, so and so the material that they used, and the Europeans did not sell them the best material, did not mm-hmm. Teach them the best processing techniques or tools to use. All right, consequently, mm-hmm. what they produce, all right, did not last very long. And, of course, the climate in Africa, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, equatorial areas, and what have you, you know, the environment is pretty harsh on some materials. Where
right.
Maybe not so in the northern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the plastic bricks, you know, was ideal because of the strength that they manifested. Didn't break down, didn't succumb to the heat, could withstand, mm-hmm. you know, temperatures, you know, in the hundreds of degrees, 90 degrees, and 80s, all right, throughout the year. So it was ideal. Now, the only thing, and right now my research did not allow me to see if, you know, sometimes as you heat, plastic emits fumes because it's an aggregate,
right.
a petroleum product. Byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
Right, petrol, all right. And so the fumes are toxic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's one. I didn't know whether the process somehow averted that, but, you know, as long as you got plastic there, or whether the mm-hmm. combination of the plastic with the other material to make the bricks inhibit the ability, the fumes to be emitted in the environment that the bricks mm-hmm. were made in and constructed and used in. So I didn't, my research didn't go into that, but I thought it was very innovative, you know, to find out that, you know, the ingenuity of people to look at these things that's been cluttering and piling up on the environment where they weren't there before and come up with
right.
a recycling process to be able to use these materials. And it's very good.
Right.
And I'm very glad that we have such examples of those kind of sustainable projects, because it
mm-hmm.
allows us to be able to say, well, we can do some things and we can sustain some things in spite of the fact
mm-hmm.
we're dominated by Western culture and economic system.
Yes, for sure. And they leave the garbage and we pick it up and make something that we can use. I'm going to invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. If you are on your computer, you can go to www.usliftingup.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on the to listen live. Let's see if we have any questions. No. Brother Shabaka, you've got everybody so enthralled listening to you. Nobody wants to interrupt you with questions. But I'm going to interrupt you for a minute with just a little piece of music, okay? Welcome back to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night weekly radio program where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how we're going to do it. Before the break, Brother Shabaka was sharing with us why African sustainability is so important. Brother Shabaka, is Africa the only place where people of African ancestry can produce sustainable projects? You described some good projects on the continent, so what's going on elsewhere?
Yeah, thanks again, sister, for that. No, Africa is not the only country where we can have such projects and sustain those projects. In fact, we have a number of projects in this country. The importance, though, of Africa is the mere fact that we are definitely the majority population, even though that we have maybe neocolonial type government structures, all right, still they are our structures. And everything is used to work to keep the people ignorant of their capacity to do things, all right, like bringing a just government, a just structure, political structure, which will enhance their socioeconomic viability. So, I mean, and it's worked with the people in Europe to try to keep that image in the minds of many of our brothers and sisters on the continent. In the Caribbean, we are a majority population too, similarly structured the way Africa is. But here in the U.S., we face a dilemma where we are not the majority population. Unfortunately, our population has stopped increasing. We've been about 12 to 13% of the national population for well over a decade, where we was the largest growing population until the Hispanic and Latino people came in, and now they have exceeded us in terms of, and I'm not talking about those who've been crossing the line illegally. I'm talking about those who were here. They're producing, producing babies, and we're not producing a sufficient number of babies. All right. But there are areas where we can develop and produce sustainable projects, particularly in those areas where we are a majority of population, okay, and we have, and being a majority, we may have access or some control or leverage with the local government. All right, we have access to people that might have plannings for the community. We can have those sustaining projects. And let me just give you a couple of examples. In fact,
okay,
there was a brother in Rhode Island. All right, his name is Lonre Ajakaye. All right, he's a first generation African American, and what that means is that he was born here, but his parents weren't. I think he's from Nigeria.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
All right, but he was born here. he's a real estate developer and investor. And what he has done was created one of the largest black-owned real estate projects in the state of Rhode Island. His project will be about 1,500 square feet, state-of-the-art center of excellence in the heart of Providence that will feature 3D black historical exhibits, a new age financial literacy, and a career center, a world-class multipurpose functional hall, innovative co-working entrepreneurial space, and et cetera. So he has been able to bring developers from around the company and investors, not developers, but he's a developer, but investors from around the company to put together and this project, which is to open soon. All right, it's also said that his project especially addresses gaps offering financial literacy education because in the community that this will be in, I think 73% of the community is people of color. Now, I don't really know whether, you know, people say people of color. Now, I'm a black man. People of color. I'm African. You know, I don't know. People of color, yeah.
People of color are really black.
Yeah,
white people
can
say I'm the color white. Yeah. You know, come on.
Yeah, I'm the color white, right. But anyway, 73% supposedly of the community in this particular area, Providence, Rhode Island, are people of color. Okay, I was going to say some of them are black. He's a black man, so I guess some of them are black, okay? All right. The project will also have, like I said, multi-purpose function halls and state-of-the-art interactive museum, all right, an interactive museum. Now, he's got 15,000 square feet of space to be able to do this. This is excellent. All right. So you say, well, now he'll build this. What does he need to sustain it? Now, since it's in Providence, Rhode Island, that's a city, a large city in Rhode Island. Okay, capital, I guess. Obviously, the resources will be there needed, and it's important because it's large.
Right.
Now, you need the human resources, which will be the professionals, be able to carry it out. All right, you need, and they have to be paid. So you have to have this project such that either you're going to, if it's, it itself does not generate sufficient revenue and income to pay the staff who will be manning this, then you have to have access to foundations who will supply because of the need and because of the purpose of this facility that he's helping to build and create. So that can be sustained. All right. Now, what I just described is what a few of the things that would be necessary to sustain it. Money, professional people, paying those professional people, also the resources that you will need, the sophisticated technology that you will need in order to produce this. It has to be sustained. So you have the energy cost that will be sustained. So you have to have at least marketing of this. And, of course, whatever rates that you charge for people to use, it should be able to be comfortable enough so that people in the surrounding communities can use it. All right? They can pay to use it. It can't have the rate so high that they can just look at it only. All right, so there are some of the factors. There's some of the factors that is needed in order to sustain it. Now, Providence, Rhode Island, all right, remember we talked earlier about the internal interruption, and external. Evidently, when we look at the external, is there something else going on that would prohibit or inhibit that particular project from sustaining or remaining, all right? Evidently, since he's got the money, he has to get permission from the government in order to begin to do the development necessary because of the zoning. So evidently, he got that. So the government is not using eminent domain to put something else up. All right, so that's a factor. Now, he has some powerful backers. That's economics. All right, so you know the government always backed down when the financial and money muscle comes in. So that's important in sustaining. Do you have the economic clout and backing, all right, to resist with the frivolous attempt by the state to be able to overpower or stop what you are producing? Very important. And we have to realize that because sometimes when we build stuff, we do stuff, you know, it's romantic. You know, we got a romantic attachment, emotional attachment to this. We sometimes forget the environment that we're in. And the environment that we're in, Rhode Island, I don't care if it's Rhode Island, I don't care if it's Chicago, Miami, is the environment of the United States. And that environment is hostile to, and I'll use the term that they have here, that environment is hostile to people of color, particularly black people of color.
Okay.
So you have to be, when you build, I always say that when you put together something that you want to be able to sustain, first it has to be needed, and there has to be the feasibility that when you do your analysis and your assessment, not only is it needed, but you now know that you can put together the resources to build it, all right? Now, once you build it, you got to be able to market it or promote it such that for the people that it was designed, all right, to attract and help, all right, you're now going to bring them in because they're going to be part of what is necessary to sustain. All right, hopefully you bring them in, particularly to develop the kind of economy that is necessary to create the muscle in case City Hall decides they want to do something else. Okay,
right, for
and
sure.
You would already have, so when you develop something, it must be strategic. Strategic, I'm defining in this sense, must be a strategy based on the information that you're able to collect it to make sure that this thing is long-term as you can possibly make it. And so you're aware of what City Hall has planned, all right, and therefore you have the political clout to go there at the meetings or what have you, even put people maybe in City Hall, all right, to divert their plans to something else so that it doesn't interrupt you. Also, another case that you asked that you didn't ask about, but I'm gonna tell you about. Excuse me. Last year, the end of last year, there was a bid. There were bids, I should say, all right, to buy Crenshaw Mall in downtown L.A. Now that's a 40-acre mall, all right, and that was up for sale. A group of community groups, blacks and Latinos, all right, got together and some whites and managed to bring some investors and was able to at least start an initial bidding of $28 million. They was pretty upbeat that they had been able to gather, accrue $28 million to make a bid for that mall. Unfortunately, a group out in New York, all right, and they haven't disclosed, but it says that they put down something like over $100 million, all right, for the mall.
Well,
all right, don't know what they put down. All right. That wasn't successful, but that mall, for what they had designs, was definitely to create sort of like a cooperative environment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A cooperative environment that would serve the people, employ the people, have startups for the people, in other words, space for startups for the people. It's almost similar, if I can use, I say similar, it's not entirely the same, as the Ulu Mart, all right, that is on the drawing board for Ulu. All right, and we'll talk about that a little later. All right, so they didn't get it, but this group out of New York did get it. And they just negotiated that with the group out of New York that would, that they would have some activities, you know, to deal with assisting the community around this mall. Now, that's interesting.
Right.
All right. Now, we might say, why didn't the community groups that got together didn't get it, and the New York group, 3,000 miles away, got it? And see, that's what I'm talking about when we talk about political climate and the economic might in order to sustain sustain what it is that you want. And the muscle was over there. But not only was the muscle over there, the connection was over there, because we're talking about groups 3,000 miles away. The the New York group was able to identify investors and got sufficient funds to be able to do the mall. Now, you know, our mall was to serve the population there, the population in South Central and downtown areas, heavily populated with us, all right, didn't have a chance primarily for this reason. This is Shabaka assessment. One, all right, L.A. is the second largest city in the country, all right, have a very large African population as well as a very large Hispanic population. Okay, the mall was designed to empower that community as power. As power. That's not only capitalism, that's power. All right. This group out of New York, all right, was able to, through its connections, do that. Now, they're not necessarily in terms of benefiting the people in that community. Their job, like any enterprise that's been here, is to take from that community, exploit, and then take the resources and wealth out of that community, where before the wealth was going to be sustained in that community. All right, see, these are the kind of things where we have to assess the environment in which we're in to see whether an activity, an event, an opportunity that I think can be sustainable. All right, sustainability means, all right, can it do the things that I listed before? And at the same time, if the answer is yes, all right, can I identify those internal or external contradictions that later on may impede the ability for it to sustain? Like, remember now, I said that you have to have resources coming in to replace resources that may be depleted that you're using, such that you can sustain what's going on. If you can't do that, the sustainability is just a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. All right. All right. Let me stop here to see if there's anybody that might want to say or howl at me, disagree with me, yell at me, or whatever.
I'm telling you, you got everybody that speaks this day. They can't. They have nothing to say. So we're going to play a little piece of music so you can, you know, catch your breath a minute, and then we'll come back and finish up.
Okay.
Greetings. I want to make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. And as I turn up the collarbone, my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street. But not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them need? I saw a disregard, a broken bottle top, and one man's soul. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one.
Peace. We are back. Brother Shabaki, we have someone on the line. Caller with the number 3176. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your question or comment, please.
Greetings, Sister Q, Brother Shabaka. This is Brother Auntie from calling from Atlanta. How y'all feeling this evening?
Peace, Brother Auntie. Feeling good. How about you?
Feeling good. Thank you, brother, for calling in.
And it's profound and probably providential that this is part of the conversation that we're having on Earth Day around sustainability. And it raised a couple of ideas in my mind that I just wanted to add to the conversation. One of the things that around sustainability is that it is a change in the way we think about life and particularly about how we live on the planet Earth. What I'm saying, for example, is in the Western mindset, there's this idea of extraction without mm-hmm. putting back. And so you deplete everything, right?
Right.
I was looking at some information coming out of an African-centered farming community here in the United States, and they were just talking about, for example, when they plant crops, they don't plant just one crop, but they think in terms of a whole ecosystem of crops that replenish the soil, of crops that gather nutrients in such a way that they are beneficial to the human body, and mm-hmm. they replenish the soil as they are planting. So we know, for example, that in the South during the period of slavery, that the Southern slave planters, they planted monocrops. So it was either cotton or tobacco, and they just depleted the soil. And had it not been for Dr. George Washington Carver, who showed them proper land use practices and started doing crop rotation and planting things like peanuts to help rebuild and replenish the soil. So this whole idea of sustainability has to do with really mimicking nature and mm-hmm. renewing our ability to live on the planet without destroying the planet. And the, one of the things that came to mind, for example, indigenous folks, African folk, have been farming for thousands of years. Always keeping back a portion of their seed, developing the strongest seed, planting that over and over and over, and that is how the environment was able to produce healthy plants that in turn produced healthy people. But you get a corporation like Monsanto that comes along, and it starts causing farmers to have to use their seed. And fascinatingly, the Monsanto seed doesn't reproduce. So once
right.
you plant a particular species of vegetation using the Monsanto seeds, it's a one season crop, and every year mm-hmm. you have to come back to Monsanto to get seeds to plant the next year, and that has bankrupted right. African farmers and Latino farmers and other indigenous folk, but it's the mindset of extraction mm-hmm. that has brought us to this crisis in global warming, where for something as simple as if we use the energy of the sun to heat our homes and move our vehicles, the sun, as long as the sun is burning, we got energy. But the,
right.
the corporations want to use oil, which they have to extract out of the earth, and
mm-hmm.
and they deplete the fields that they have, and they have to constantly drill, 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 and everywhere they drill, they disturb and destroy and disrupt, as Brother Shabaka has been pointing out, this vital irreplaceable resource. And so right. the idea of sustainability is to change the way we're thinking. How mm-hmm. do we interact with land in a way that allows us to stay on the land? And this, the last thing that I just wanted to put into the conversation is, like, we in Ulu believe that a cooperative economic model is the sustainable model because right. it's a model that helps meet the needs of people and gives mm-hmm. back to both the that we can do this
Hello?
For thousands of years. But yes. if we continue with the capitalist way of production, all we do is exploit and extract and destroy and leave in the wake devastated communities. And that's what we're seeing everywhere that particular economic model has been used. So I just want to thank you guys for bringing us to this conversation about what is a more sustainable way to live on the planet and why cooperative economics is a better model to organize human activity so that we can live in cooperation with the planet. Thank you for letting
thank
me
you.
Share.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing. We're going to get back. There was somebody else, but they fell off the line. Okay, so Brother Shabaka, you described some good projects on the African continent and here in the U.S. Although the Crenshaw Mall projects was not successful, it showed a good effort by community groups. Brother Anki just brought it up. How can sustainability of African projects be enhanced by the Ulu model?
Well, thank you, sister, and thank you, Brother Auntie, for your insights and added information. The brother is right. See, one of the things that the mindset is one of the things that I see is necessary in order to change us. The examples that I gave you of sustainability area on a material front showed as long mm-hmm. as there was not opposition, you know, those things could be sustained, the community mm-hmm. could last. What he described, you know, about the farming, where recycling of seeds could be used over and over. All right, well, that's mm-hmm. some of the things that they're doing over there with the Sanghei Farming Center in Benin. So, you know, I'm glad he brought that up because we're doing some of the same and similar kind of things here. Mm-hmm. But we are still operating, as he said, in a capitalistic environment. Well, really, I always like to look at capitalism as a tool that is used by the white supremacist model in order to sustain themselves. All right, now they're in a mm-hmm. crunch, as he, brother Auntie said, you know, with the development of disruption of the ecosystem that we see, mm-hmm. you know, there mm-hmm. there is the possibility, you know, in a few decades to come, that what we see now is not going to be sustained in order to sustain life as we know it.
Right.
But let me get back to the question you asked about Ulu. Mm-hmm. What we do in Ulu model, Ujamaa, is family-centered economics. Now, what mm-hmm. do I mean? Earlier I said that people, in fact, I think when I talked last about sustainability, I mentioned Neely Fuller talking about how the Europeans or the white supremacists control through nine areas of people activity,
mm-hmm.
Nine main areas of people activity is this control that they subjugate us. All right. What Ulu attempts to do, if we talk about family-centered, everybody at the family level is engaged in activity. The family, members of the family are engaged in activities within that family. Then you got families engaged in activities with other families. All right, mm-hmm. that springs about communities, all right, or neighborhoods. It's not community until you have some degree of control with what happens
Absolutely.
Inside of that community. Right. All right, but mm-hmm. right now, at least in terms of the African, at least here in the U.S., we have communities, all right? We can mm-hmm. develop strong communities. What Ulu has put together is a plan where we basically aggregate resources that we have. That's both human and material, but importantly, those dollars with those dead president pictures on them, accumulating mm-hmm. those kind of things, okay? Now, how does that relate to family-centered economics? Well, very, very distinctly, Ulu has what we call a UBC, Ulu-based collective. These are like small units of families.
Mm-hmm.
Small okay. units of families, okay? The mm-hmm. objectives of these is to learn about each other, the history of their people, the history of the community that they are a part.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so these are small centers. You can call them cells. You know, in the communist setting, they call them cells. All right,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
the objective was to at some point be awakened and then take over something. All right, but we're not trying to take over anything. We're just trying to sustain those things that we create for the benefit of our people. All right,
absolutely.
So these UBCs, all right, as they are developing culturally, all right, by studying their people, and I mean not just studying mm-hmm. the people in the community that they're in, they got to study African history. They got to know mm-hmm. the history, got to know how they got here, you know, how black mm-hmm. folks are on both sides of the Atlantic. We got to know how that happened. We got to know about black folks being in the U.S., not U.S., but in the Americas before Columbus mm-hmm. was born, knew there was
right.
an America, all right? We mm-hmm. were here,
mm-hmm.
all right? In fact, the navigator, let's say Columbus navigator was a Moor.
Mm-hmm.
Last mm-hmm. time I checked, a Moor came out of Africa, not Europe.
Okay. Right.
In fact, mm-hmm. the queen, the so-called Queen of England, go back in her history, her great-great-great-great-grandmother was a Moor. And so you
exactly.
know what I want to call her, but I won't do it on this. I'll respect it because her mother was a Moor, and her mother wasn't white. Great-great-great-grandmother wasn't white. Was a Moor. All right, well, having said that, got my comic out. All right, mm-hmm. we developed this. We know about each other. All right, in
exactly.
addition to knowing about our history and our culture, our people, and then working with the families that come together in this UBC, all right,
mm-hmm.
another instruction is to learn about the economic activity that happens inside that community that you are a part. All right,
right.
Who are your black businesses? Where are they located? How are they
mm-hmm.
doing? All right,
mm-hmm.
visit them sometimes, all right? Who has
mm-hmm.
interesting ideas about shortages that could be served by a business? This is your UBCs, all right?
Mm-hmm.
These UBCs
mm-hmm.
could be in Houston, they could be in L.A., they could be in Atlanta, they could be in Nairobi, Kenya, all right? They could be in Windhoek, Namibia. They could be in Lagos, Nigeria. They could be anywhere, all right?
Okay.
But their objective is to know the history of the area where they are, what are the business activities that exist there, and begin to
mm-hmm.
communicate that to the authoritative members or groups in Ulu to develop structures and opportunities, structures, and to examine how those structures can lead to a successful business, all right?
Okay.
The identification of the business is important. Now, remember now, it's communities, all right, formed by families coming together as these UBCs, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They are assessing the environment. They are assessing their community, all right? They are assessing the economic and business activity there. And then they are communicating that, developing, one, what is needed in this community that is not here now,
mm-hmm.
all right? What are the feasibility studies or projects that would need to take place to see if we can develop what is necessary to address the shortage or scarcity or what is
mm-hmm.
lacking here now, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So once you advance what those are, all right, does what we want to do, all right, help to employ people who are here now that are not employed? All right. And then strategically, in answering those questions, how do we assess our ability to sustain what we create such that it will be long-lasting. Not forever, because we know not for mm-hmm. forever, but long-lasting as much as we can acquire the information necessary and plan for the sustainability of that which is created. So we mm-hmm. have to know, it has to have one, oh, and of course, lastly, I didn't say this, it must be profitable. Well, mm-hmm. this is an economic okay. activity and business. It's got to be profitable so that those profits can be distributed among the people who create the profits. And see, right now, and all of that information that I just talked about, and it looked like mm-hmm. we're running out of time. All right,
yeah, we're
going to
go a little over.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead and finish what you're
okay,
doing.
Okay, I'll end it now. I'll get so people can get that. All you have to do is go to the website, usliftingus.com. That's USLIFTINGUS.com. And then you will see, you know, the various information on there that will show you about how to participate, all right, in this activity that ULU is currently involved in. And particularly, it's extremely important, the UBCs are the foundation, because in the UBCs are the family, the essence of the family structure that is needed, all right, to establish a family-centered economy, Ujamaa, mm-hmm. all right, along with the principles that allow you to be able to communicate harmoniously with members of the community, first by communicating harmoniously with your own family members and then with other families and with the larger community, all right. So they are the ingredients that is necessary. And then, of course, learning, all right, the essence of what does it take, all right, to have a successful business, and can what we describe as a successful business is an application here. And that application here is that it's needed, and then how can we sustain it, all right? Because that's the study, because you're going to strategically place it. And I'd like to thank the listening audience for giving me this opportunity. I'd like to thank you, Sister Q, for having me on. And I hope that some mm-hmm. people have gotten something out of this. Appreciate Brother Auntie's comments and support. And so I think we're on the road to move. And thank you again.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 p.m. with another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Away out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang up alleyway. With the groove I only got, we shall all be moved. Ready or not, here we come. Getting down on the one which we believe. My constriction.